Welcome back. This is Tom Hayden subbing for Ian Masters. I'm delighted to be here talking about Julian Assange, Bradley Manning, and the WikiLeaks case with Spencer Downing and Alan Minsky. Did you have an announcement, Spencer, or should we go right back?
I'll announce it at the end of the program.
All right. I want to read the statement that was given to me and the nation last week by the new attorney for Julian Assange, Gareth Pearce, and I'm quoting, "The history of this case is as unfortunate as it is possible to imagine, in which encounters, undoubtedly believed by all parties at the time to be private, became inappropriately the subject of publicity and therefore, in consequence, no doubt the more difficult to resolve. Each of the human beings involved deserves respect and consideration. It is hoped that whatever steps, as are required, to be taken in the future will be taken thoughtfully, with sensitivity, and with such respect." Now, you might say, what the hell does that mean? If you follow the case, there was, unfortunately, a series of statements made by either Julian Assange or his lawyers disparaging the women and the Swedish system of justice. And it'll be denied perhaps now, but it's all on the record. It's all in the article that will be in The Nation tomorrow. Nothing original there, just straight out of the court documents. And so the effect of this is that Swedish feminists are concerned, and Swedish public opinion at the attitude towards the women's case and at the attitude towards Swedish justice, which Swedes think is at least comparable to the UK. Now, it's not paradise. This is a country where the CIA has worked with secret police to render people off to Egypt where they were tortured. This is a country that's led by a center-right government that favors the war in Afghanistan. The people like Michael Moore, who gave $20,000 to Assange's defense fund, are not wrong in thinking that the hand of the intelligence agencies is somehow there. The problem is that would have to be a perfect crime because there's no evidence for that yet. There will be probably in 20 years. WikiLeaks will probably uncover it. But for now, it makes people feel, hey, he's got something against Sweden. And if he has to go stand trial in Sweden, why is it in his interest to disparage Swedes? That's the dilemma that this lawyer, his new lawyer, is trying to resolve. She thinks he's got a case on extradition, but I think you'll see a new tone where she's trying not to antagonize people in the country to which he may very well be extradited someday soon.
Well, speaking of that relationship with the Swedish justice system and also with Swedish society as a whole, you've pointed out in a few things you've written that there are still some kind of nasty questions that rise up when thinking about this. One of the questions that people seem to always ask is this question about ulterior motives on the part of the women who are in the heart of this case, and that they might be anti-Assange, anti-WikiLeaks, and so forth. What would you say to that?
You may know me as Tom Hayden, whatever image you have of me, but I am first and foremost a journalist who is obsessed with not being fooled. I try to get at the truth. I try to find out what is going on here. I am not a propagandist. I looked. I talked to the lawyer for the women extensively, and it all seemed very explainable to me as a collision of sexual appetites and nothing more. That Anna Arden is a member of the Christian Social Democrats doesn't mean anything to me. That she was running for office doesn't mean anything. That she didn't know the other woman. It seems to me, I was told by one of my sources that Julian Assange has ascended to this rock star status, which we know is really problematic. It creates sexual attractions and vibrations wherever one goes. And he's single, they're single, it happened. And when it gets down to the details, I'd be glad to answer more questions. But I think it's best summed up by what Anna Arden said in the only interview, not like she's seeking publicity, the only interview given after these events last August. She said this, and I'm quoting, "The charges are not orchestrated by the Pentagon or anyone else. The responsibility for what happened to me and the other girl lies with a man who has a warped attitude to women and a problem with taking no for an answer. He's not violent, and I do not feel threatened by him." The lawyer for the two women, who's also accused of being a radical feminist, whatever that is, I asked him, well, at the end of the day, do you want Assange to be extradited from Sweden to the United States if he comes here? And he said, no, I would hope not. And then he said, I don't think the women do either. But you can't print that.
Now, to clarify again, the two separate cases connecting them, the only manner in which the Swedish case would actually contribute to his extradition to the United States is that if he was in jail cell in Sweden, you would know where he is the day you wanted to find him and extradite him, because it really has no relationship to his extradition to the United States, the case in Sweden.
No, the case in Sweden is a sexual assault case that ordinarily would not put a person in prison. It has the effect of, number one, discrediting his global reputation profoundly.
I understand all
and
of that.
And number two, it puts him on Swedish soil as if that's better territory to try to snatch him. But when I talked to David Lee, the editor of The Guardian, he said it works both ways. I mean, the United Kingdom cooperates with the CIA. We have tortured people. He's no safer in London than he is in Stockholm. So I don't know what the perceived difference is. He's in trouble either way. But if I were advising him, I would say, let's lift the reputational problem from your back and treat the women's case with the respect that it deserves, and then put the issue of WikiLeaks and the U.S. Justice Department grand jury in perspective.
You probably heard the little bit of the Amy Goodman interview with Julian Assange where your article was brought up, and he was initially a little defensive, but not as much as I thought he was going to be after his sort of initial volley of defensiveness.
Yeah, I didn't think he was ready for it. Amy was briefed.
But it does strike me that he wasn't thinking very clearly as this all was happening a few months ago. Do you think that the change in lawyers signifies, even in spite of his maybe defensiveness in his response to Amy, that he realizes he was tacking that he was taking was harming him?
Maybe. He's a very proud individual, and he's a very, very smart individual.
Mm-hmm, sure.
Do we know anybody like this? They don't back down or change their minds very easily.
But he has changed his legal team.
Well, he got rid of the lawyers.
Right.
And not because they were high-priced, although they are high-priced Fleet Street lawyers, according to my sources. He took on a lawyer who, by her whole tone, is utterly different, while still being a first-class human rights lawyer. So I expect changes to occur rapidly, but they might come in small drops. I watched that interview closely, and I felt like, you know, Amy did the job that you guys do, you know, on the live media. She dropped it on him, and he wasn't ready to answer. But I could tell he was struggling with the new answer. You know, no one's criticized the integrity of the women.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went back into these differences between Swedish law and almost sounding like he didn't want to go to a country where he didn't speak the language. It was a muddled but highly prepared answer. And let's wait and see what happens on the 12th and 13th. You know, he's already been ordered to be extradited.
Right.
People
right.
forget this in right. February. And I read all the legal documents, 500 pages, and it took the judge about an hour to render a decision. So who knows? On the 12th, he goes to the High Court. If he's rejected, he can go to the Supreme Court. If he's rejected, he's got an interesting case before the European Court of Human Rights, and that's where Gareth Pearce is brilliant. I think it becomes very difficult for the European Court to approve an extradition to America if he's going to be, the phrasing is something like, mistreated in the course of his trial, as in violations of due process, destruction of his reputation, etc., things that are much less than coercion or torture.
And one final question, as we're almost running out of time here. Clearly, the momentum that WikiLeaks had going back to the end of last year seems to have been slowed down somewhat. Now, it might just be that they did some very high-profile dumps from the diplomatic cables. Other things are just coming out that aren't as sexy. But do you have a sense that their momentum has been stalled? I mean, they talked about a Bank of America piece, other things about, you know, stuff in the Cayman Islands, but we haven't heard details on those yet.
I wouldn't predict. In the course of social movements, there's an early period where the revolution seems to be at hand and great things are happening. And the first phase of WikiLeaks was like that. And it's now over. The Egyptian revolution in the first 20 days. Now it's in a different phase. So I think that it's in a different phase. But that also means WikiLeaks has been so embedded in mainstream journalism that it's really hard to extract. And certainly, you can't get rid of the WikiLeaks effect by demonizing Assange or holding Bradley Manning.
And in the where you started with the movement of hackers and activists around the world, I believe in the last 24 hours, Fox News got hacked. So
there you go. And The hackers are wearing suits and ties, I noticed. They're becoming more presentable.
In the last minute then, Tom Hayden, who's been sitting in for Ian Masters today, remind us, what's the big picture here? Why should people actually care about this? Why should we be involved in this? This is a guy who is one individual who's stuck in the UK, might be extradited to Sweden, and God forbid gets extradited out of there. But what's the big picture here?
Well, I think the United States and the powers that be in every country want to make an example of Julian Assange and squash him in the false and vain hope that that'll stop more disclosure of embarrassing or classified information. So he's a symbol. And he's a symbol to organize around, to educate people around. People will be glued to the media if this trial goes forward. And it's up to local activists, whether they're in Haiti or in Los Angeles or North Africa, to make use of the WikiLeaks documents. Professors ought to be teaching WikiLeaks classes. We're moving into a period of declassification of the secret state, and this is the symbolic trial for that period. I have spent every waking moment since virtually since 9/11 on Afghanistan and Iraq, and WikiLeaks has released more vital information to me about secret armies, about outsourcing torture. We have to remember what they have accomplished and put in the public domain of democracy.
Thanks very much, Tom Hayden. This is producer Spencer Downing, producer for Background Briefing. Tom Hayden and Alan Minsky and I have been sitting in for Ian Masters. Tom Hayden was one of the organizers of Students for a Democratic Society. He drafted the Port Huron Statement, which asked Americans to reconsider what the nation should be about and its role in the world. Ever since then, he's been working to make America a more fair, more just, and more honest broker and actor in the world. And as part of that, he's been working actively to end the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, and elsewhere. The first guest we had today, Congresswoman Barbara Lee, has been working the same. She was the only person in Congress to vote against the authorization of military force in Afghanistan and later in Iraq, and she has maintained that position ever since. We were talking about her strategies for getting not just people who are on the side of pacifism, but also Democrats who had supported the war, and even some Republicans, to come up with legislative strategies for getting the United States out of Afghanistan. Among the things she talked about was the need to cut funding. That's one of the things that Congress actually does have the power to do, although there have been runarounds that allow the executive to declare de facto war or to engage in war acts. And as recently the Obama administration said, that War Powers Act does not apply to the actions in Libya. Congresswoman Lee pointed out that Congress does have the ability to grab the purse strings. What the Congresswoman is calling on people to do is to push their legislative leaders to get them to understand that the United States needs to be out of Afghanistan and that they should join this move to bring the troops home. There's been a drawdown, of course, but it is a limited one. And as Tom Hayden pointed out, it's hardly enough. Yet one of the things they suggested is the possible strategy of using this as a first step in getting a larger drawdown of the troops who are in Afghanistan and perhaps working toward an end toward war in Iraq. Hayden also pointed out that there will be a meeting with the administration and also the G8 summit in Chicago and suggested that activists should be there just as activists were at the 68 Democratic Convention to make life difficult for Rahm Emanuel and let people across the world and around the world know exactly what they feel about the actions of the United States and the other major economic powers. Tom Hayden has been working for that kind of activism for some years. Another aspect of that has been the function of WikiLeaks in pointing out the ways in which the United States has gone beyond its own mandates for conducting warfare. And now Julian Assange, as the founder and the force behind WikiLeaks, is under a personal kind of warfare. He is facing charges in Sweden that are complex, to say the least. Some of those charges are charges that would not be prosecutable under U.S. law, for example, his refusal to take an HIV test. And at the same time, there's a distinct worry, at least among his legal team, that an extradition to Sweden might possibly result in an extradition to the United States facing charges of treason or espionage or some other thing like that. As Hayden pointed out, these complexities take some time to ferret out and have become more interesting and more complex as he's changed his own legal team. Underlying all of this is Hayden's belief that Julian Assange represents a kind of hero for our time. Above all, he respects Assange's commitment to keeping information as free and open as possible. As he pointed out in his discussion, one of the things he learned from historian Howard Zinn is that governments keep things secret from the people they fear. And the U.S. government spends most of its energy these days keeping things secret from the American people. Because of this, Julian Assange represents a new kind of heroism. And as Hayden argues, we should all be paying attention to what's happening to him in this legal case. Even more so, should this case turn out to be an extradition to Sweden with perhaps the extradition to the United States, we'll have three countries involved. Perhaps this may be the trial of the century. Again, you've been listening to Background Briefing. I'm Spencer Downing, the producer. Tom Hayden, Alan Minsky, and I sat in for Ian today. Kim Nassiter was our producer, and we also had production help from Wesley Saver. Log on to ianmasters.com to learn more about the program, listen to older programs, and to contact Ian. Click on the contact button to send Ian an email. And we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Background Briefing. Bye for now.